Penguin Random House Audio presents Above the Pacific, Three Medal of Honor Fighter Aces of World War II Speak by Colin Heaton. Read for you by the author Colin Heaton with Steve Hendrickson, Gary Bennett, and Sean Renette. For my father, he was always my greatest fan. Colonel Gregory Boynton, USMC retired, December 4, 1912 to January 11, 1988. Gregory Boynton is still revered today as a Marine Corps legend, fighter pilot, ace, and all-around bad boy. But of all the interviews I've conducted over many years, Boynton was and remains the most controversial. Separating fact from fiction both during and after the interview process became an exercise in frustration. While much of the information Boynton gave me was challenged by others who were often present during certain events, other events were corroborated and even clarified. General Curtis E. LeMay and General James H. Doolittle, mutual acquaintances, both warned me about Boynton's storytelling. But it was Doolittle who put me in touch with him. Doolittle's advice? Just listen, record, and be prepared to be entertained. LeMay said, "Let me read that interview when you are done. I like reading good fiction." The late historian Jeffrey L. Ethel, my personal friend and mentor, also offered sage advice. Boynton will spin any tall tale into a good story if you are willing to listen, but you have to buy the drinks. I first called Boynton in 1982 after receiving a positive response to a letter I'd sent him. He was abrupt on the phone, but nevertheless agreed I could call again. Eventually, after we'd spoken several times, he told me that if I ever got to Fresno, he would give me an interview. He asked what I drank and if I liked scotch. Unsure of where the conversation was going, I told him that I did enjoy a single malt on occasion. "Good. You are not a pussy then," he said. What an introduction. I arrived the morning of the interview 10 minutes early. Boynton opened the door, said, "You're early," and shut the door. So I waited. At 0900 sharp, the door opened again, and he greeted me as if he had never seen me before but was glad that I was there. As I walked in, he asked if I would like coffee. I said, "Yes, sir," and he asked how I liked it. I said, "Black." "No, what do you like in it?" He pointed to several varieties of liquor, most of them scotch. I imbibed with him with a Johnny Walker shot in my black coffee. Boynton's house was neat, and his basement was a museum of artifacts, real treasures. His citations were framed nicely, and he happily personalized a print that I'd brought. He pointed to a stack of other prints and books, saying that he was yet to sign those too. He freely spoke about his life, the war, and his personal issues, and he was never hesitant to call out people he thought were less than intelligent or dedicated. In that, he had a lot in common with LeMay, whom I interviewed 2 days later. LeMay and I had a little discussion about my visit with Boynton, and LeMay said, "You look pretty good for a guy who had to walk through all that bullshit." Before the United States entered World War II, hundreds of Americans volunteered to serve in combat, many as pilots. Most expatriate fighter pilots flew for a paycheck, but many joined up just for the adventure. A good number who signed up to fight the Germans in 1940 with the Royal Air Force Eagle Squadrons did not return to American uniform until 1942, if at all. Others like Boynton served in the American Volunteer Group, AVG, the famed Flying Tigers, a colorful group often labeled as mercenaries, under Brigadier, later Major General Claire Chennault, in China and Burma. Fighting in support of Chiang Kai-shek as the Japanese rampaged through China, the AVG was home to men who became legends, tough men doing a tough job in an inhospitable place where discipline was perhaps less important than getting results. Despite only being in combat from December 20, 1941, to July 4, 1942, they nevertheless became famed worldwide for their service, shooting down 229 Japanese aircraft and destroying another 68 on the ground against a loss of just 16 of their own 40 members. Gregory Boynton brought his skills and mindset to the war after several years as an instructor pilot with the United States Marine Corps. He admitted that he was always eager to mix it up in a fight. Whether he was in the sky or in an officer's club, he admitted his approach to life made him his own worst enemy. Yet, regardless of what people thought of Boynton as a person, all had to admit that he was the type of guy you wanted fighting your nation's enemies. His personal life was a combination of glory, exceptional, albeit controversial, service, and a lifelong struggle with alcoholism, their primary reason he had four wives and myriad severed professional and personal relationships. Speaking about Boynton, his fellow Medal of Honor recipient, Navy captain and top Navy fighter ace David McCampbell, remarked, "If you have an event where alcohol is being served, protect your open bar. I would suggest armed security." Colonel Gregory Boynton died of cancer on January 11, 1988, and was buried with full military honors at Arlington National Cemetery. A few years later, I was talking with World War II Marine Corps fighter pilot, Medal of Honor recipient, and South Dakota Air National Guard Brigadier General Joe Foss, and Boynton's name came up. "I wonder if they put a bottle of scotch in his casket," Foss said. "That would be the best send-off." The following narrative is the result of a series of interviews I conducted with Greg Boynton by telephone from 1985 to 1986, and a personal interview conducted in 1986 at his home in Fresno, California.
Gregory Boynton. We were from Idaho originally, and I was born in Coeur d'Alene on December 4, 1912. The family moved to Okanagan, Washington, where my parents had an apple farm. As a kid, I was into the outdoors. I liked that. My background is Sioux and Irish, so I guess I got the best and worst of both tribes in me. I hunted, fished, and read everything I could about the First World War pilots. I read the book by Robert Baden-Powell, who started the Boy Scouts in England, and I saw myself as kind of a survivalist. I knew I was going to be a pilot. I felt that I was something of a tough guy. When I was a teenager, I sort of had a reputation as a bully, or even an anti-bully. I never picked on other kids, but I was not a knight in shining armor going out of my way to help those being fucked with by bullies either. But I did make a few exceptions. This one asshole was a guy about my size named Harry some shit, and he would go around intimidating the other kids, shaking them down, just fucking with them. He beat up a few boys and took their money, one guy's watch. One guy, he thumped, was a buddy of mine. Now, I had no problem letting two guys square off in a fair fight, but this guy Harry was not like that. He was an ambush predator, a real prick. He did not want to fight. He just wanted to ambush kids and steal shit. I was not down with that at all, I can tell you. That dickhead was on my shit list. One day in school, I called him out, and he seemed to enjoy the prospect of the fight. "After school, be there," I told him, and he agreed. Well, after school, I went to the arranged location, populated by just about every kid in school waiting to see this great struggle, and he was nowhere to be seen. I waited for almost an hour and had started to walk home when I heard something in the woods to my left. It was Harry, the asshole. He was waiting to ambush me away from prying eyes, hoping to get the drop on me. He fucked up. I'd been learning boxing, and I was pretty good at it. He ran at me full speed and raised his right arm to lay down a haymaker. I saw that shit coming from downtown, and I just blocked his swing with my left arm and leaned into a full-throat punch with my right, using all my weight. He went down like a bag of bricks. I punched him a few more times, just to make sure that he bore the marks of an ass-beating in school. That would let everyone know that he was not invincible. I broke his nose, and my knuckles were bloody from his teeth, and I know that he lost at least one. I then told him that if he ever tried to do another shakedown, I would find him and kill him, no shit, certain death, not an ass-beating. I was tired of that shit. I do not believe he ever fucked with another student again. Well, my parents heard about it, and I was called into the principal's office. Harry was there with his dad, and he was looking pretty bad. His head was swollen, his jaw looked like it was stuffed, and he had raccoon eyes where his nose was broken. He was all black and blue. I did not have a mark on me except my knuckles, and I almost felt sorry for him. It came down to my word against his as to how that ass-beating went down, but the principal had heard from other kids that he had attacked them. I told my story, which was supported by a few kids who knew we were...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?